aim of Hazrat Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, that this was just a start of the revolution. It was the start of the means of the hastening of the appearance of Imam Sahib al-Asri wa Zaman. So again, our congratulations to all peace-loving people, all freedom-loving people throughout the world. And again, we pray and we hope that this revolution reaches, and rather the flag of this revolution, as the Imam said, reaches the hand of its rightful owner and the rightful ultimate and absolute manifestation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on earth, that is the Imam of the time, Imam al-Sahib al-Asri wa al-Zaman. And also, just for better understanding, is that this revolution caused shockwaves throughout the world. It still does and will continue to do so. It is up to us to understand how we can apply the teachings of Imam Khomeini and this revolution in order to make ourselves better people and our small communities, wherever we are, better communities in serving the Imam of the time under the flag of Islam. So inshallah, in our next segment, we will be introducing a book that talks about the thoughts and ideas of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, in this regard. So please stay tuned.
1979. An unprecedented wave of protests hits one of the world's oldest monarchies. Millions of angry Iranians demanded the Shah's abdication. The failing state's response is military repression, and martial law is decreed.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio. So the book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners on this, the day of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, is a book titled Fundamentals of the Islamic Revolution, Selections from the Thoughts and Opinions of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh. The book was compiled and published by the Institute for the Compilation and Publication of Imam Khomeini's Works. So we'll get back to that in a second. So it was published in the year 2000 in Tehran. And the book was translated by M.J. Khalili and S. Manafi Anari. So basically, this book is a collection, or rather, certain thoughts and opinions of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, that have been abstracted from other works. The most important one being a collection of the letters and sermons and speeches of the Imam known as Sahifa al-Imam. And this is where most of the stuff comes from. And this can be seen from the introduction of this particular book itself. So they write in the beginning of this book on where they mention some of the specialities of this particular work, or the specifics rather of this particular work, that due to the fact that many people, particularly the eager researchers abroad, are short of reaching the works and writings of Imam Khomeini, we deemed it better to prepare and publish a more summarized collection which will introduce as far as possible the Imam's thought expressed by his own tongue and pen. But this is one thing why this book was compiled. And from where it was compiled, you can see from here that in the same introduction where they mention about the specifics about this particular book, they say that many of the items of the book, meaning this book, Fundamentals of the Islamic Revolution, are related from Imam Khomeini's speeches, unchanged, which he delivered to the masses of the people. It is obvious that those speeches do not reflect all of the characteristics and particularities of the Imam's thought. However, in those speeches he handled, as required by the situation and needs of the day, the deepest ideological and political questions in a very simple expression understood by the common people. This denotes the extent he reached at in this. This denotes the extent he reached at in respect of creating close connections with the masses. In such extracts, simplicity of language and easy connection with the addressees are preferred to the scientific and technical notes. But regarding some extracts, such as his messages and writings, the Imam's deep thoughts, his scientific authority, and even his literary taste can be easily recognized. So this is why the book was written and from where it was taken from. So inshallah, in our next segment, we'll be reading a portion from the actual contents and text of this book titled The Fundamentals of the Islamic Revolution. So please stay tuned.
The people pressured the Shah into exile, euphemistically referred to as a trip. On January 16, 1979, abandoned by his American allies and visibly weakened by his six-month struggle to retain power, the Shah left the country under the gaze of his last few supporters, never to return.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio. With me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim, on this, the day of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The book that we, introduced to our dear brothers and sisters was the book titled The Fundamentals of the Islamic Revolution, which is a book, as mentioned, a selection and extracts of the speeches and the messages and the, writings of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh. So, getting straight into the book, understanding the ideology of the Imam in terms of the necessity of forming an Islamic government, one of the reasons he gives is this. So the chapter is titled, The Nature of the Islamic Laws and the Necessity of Forming Governments. Another reason concerning the necessity of forming a government is the nature and quality of the Islamic laws and precepts, which indicate that they have been legislated for establishing a government and for political, economical, and cultural administration of this society. Finally, the Islamic precepts contain diverse laws and regulations which form a general social order. This juristic order covers all which are needed by man, as from being sociable with the neighbors, one's children, tribe, relatives, citizens, that is fellow citizens, personal affairs, marital life, up to the regulations for war and peace, international relations, the penal code, commercial, industrial, and agricultural rights. It has laws for pre-marriage and before the clotting of the semen. It says how marriage should take place, what kind of food one should have at that time or when the semen is clotting, basically when a woman is pregnant. During suckling the infant, what the duties of the parents are, how the child is to be brought up, how the married couples should treat each other and with their children. For all these stages, there are laws and instructions so that a man can be brought up, a perfect and virtuous man, a man who himself is an embodiment of a moving law, a volunteer automatic executor of the law. It is obvious how much Islam cares for the government and the society's political and economical connections, so that all the conditions be at the service of educating a refined and pious man. So there you can see in the crux of what Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi is saying, is that the Islamic laws requires an Islamic government to be formed in order for man to achieve perfection. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that with the coming of the Imam, that is Imam al-Mahdi, ajjalallahu ta'ala farajun sharif, who are able to achieve that type of society which was started and the base formed by the revolution of this great mystic of the contemporary era, Hazrat Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, inshallah, until next time. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Bookshelf with Brother Yasser Ibrahim on RIB English Radio.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Shuma dar in qarn mojza kardid. ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر خمینی رهبر.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. In the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, and the Most Merciful. Salam, hello, and welcome to our audience, and particularly a warm welcome to our listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World. We are carrying on with these programs to shed light on the greatness of this great personality, Imam Khomeini. So, once again, I've got an expert in the studio, Sayyid Taqi Razavi, who's given us our valuable time, an Islamic scholar and researcher in the holy city of Qom, who has been guiding us through the life and times of Imam Khomeini. We spoke in the last program about the background, the holy lineage of the Imam, which is, you know, of great significance because he does come from the Holy Prophet's family, peace be upon them all. And of course, I'd like to say here at this moment that Imam Khomeini, really, as we will go through these programs and discover, he really gave us a glimpse of what our infallible Imams were like, because there's been a huge gap since the time of the great occultation of the 12th Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, may God hasten his appearance soon. But we got a little glimpse in the last 30 years or so, something of what the Holy Prophet's family are like, and in terms of their character, their personality, their distinguishing virtues, their scholarship, of course, and their knowledge, you know, is always a cut above the rest. And, you know, he gave us a glimpse of that. But inshallah, God willing, as we go through these programs, we are going to shed light on this in greater depth. So, Sayyid Taqi, salam, and thank you very much again for being on the program and giving us your valuable time.
Alaykum salam. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. That's great. So, Sayyid Taqi, we got to the stage, as we say, we were also putting in the background so that our listeners could understand that in what context all this was happening. And we got to the point where, you know, there are some interesting events happening around the town of Khomeini. And we were talking about the fact that because of the Qajar dynasty was at its lowest point, you know, really they had no law and order. Things were pretty much at the end of that particular era. And the British, with their machinations and their imperialist agenda, were changing things here in Iran for the worst. And I'll emphasize that. So what was happening in Khomeini at that particular moment in time where, you know, as you mentioned, we were getting to the history of Imam Khomeini's father in the town of Khomeini?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, really, I mean, during that time between 1985, his birth, and and 1903, of his shahadat. And you say, what? His shahadat? Yes.
Yes, yes. His martyrdom.
Imam Khomeini's father was martyred.
Martyred, yes.
And that area was raising a revolutionary alim-e-deen, revolutionary scholar.
Absolutely.
This Sayyid Mustafa, as his name was, Sayyid Mustafa al-Khomeini, he was Imam Khomeini's father.
Yes.
As I said, born in 1885.
Yes.
He was sent to study Islamic studies in Isfahan.
In Isfahan.
Isfahan. Yeah. He did his most of his studies in Isfahan. And then after completing certain levels in Isfahan, he made his way to Najaf and Samar, and then come back to Khomeini.
Right. So because, of course, at that time, Najaf was, you know, the central...
Indeed, that was the hub of...
The institution, the central Hoza, you know, of...
Indeed, that was the hub
clergy.
Of Islamic education,
sure.
and learning.
Sure.
And on acquiring a substantially high quality of studies,
sure.
he returned back to
Because,
to
of course, in a later program, we'll discuss the fact that, you know, how the Hoza system got established here in the holy city of Qum.
Indeed.
By
Indeed.
Ayatollah Yazdi, of course.
And there were other Hawzas in Iran already. There were certain Hawzas in Mashhad.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Hawza in Iraq. There was
sure.
a Hawza in Isfahan.
Sure.
Qum already had its own breeding point of ulama training.
Sure.
Not as a centralized institution.
Right.
But certainly if we look at a hadith from Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam, which talks about the fact that there will be a time near the zuhur of the 12th Imam.
That's correct. Correct.
Where
yes, that's a very famous
studies
hadith.
From Najaf would go down into the ground like
a snake, and
snake
it would reemerge in Qum.
Exactly, and it would raise his head up in Qum.
Qum.
You're going back to Imam Jafar Sadiq al-Islam's tradition, Imam Muhammad Baqir al-Islam's tradition.
But of course, the Hawza in Qum took on a totally different color, but that's
indeed.
Something
but
else.
Indeed, that, that is because of the nature. That is because of the nature of the revolutionized nature of the ulema that we're building around the various experiences of fatawa given
sure.
by...
And we are not digressing by any means because, of course, you know, like the father of Imam Khomeini and Imam Khomeini himself, you know, they took central roles in the establishment of this Hawza system. So that it's even if we are mentioning it now, and of course we'll discuss it in depth in a different program, but it's important to mention that these are all elements into the building up of what we're discussing here.
Indeed, not only just elements, the fact that the nature of the Hawza's operative and how it will later on take on, like Imam Khomeini and others, to guide it, to define it, define and maintain its independence from oppressive regimes.
Yes, yes. No, this is very important.
Yeah,
the independence aspect.
You have Najaf, which was always independent from any environment to be able to dictate to it. And you see, that's why you've got Sayyid Mustafa Khomeini in Khomeini, his father, taking on a very strong position, a very hard position.
Right.
Against the oppressive Khans who were around there. You know,
that's
because
true.
Of the fact that he was able to maintain that independence of the Ali Medin. The
because,
scholar.
Of course, it has to be mentioned that these oppressive Khans were, you know, at the behest of the corrupt ruling government, were taking lands.
No, they were taking land, but not only that, they were oppressing the people of that land.
Of course, I mean, they were...
And, you know, because of the fact that Imam Khomeini's father was a independent thinking person...
Sure, and resisting against this practice.
Resisting against this practice.
Criminal practice,
and,
yes.
And encouraging people to be resistance to them.
Yeah.
Yes, it meant in sacrificing life. A lot of people sacrificed their lives in Khomeini in being firmly against these people. They were tortured, they were... lame, the bodies, they were injured in various types of injuries that they had to face.
Mm.
And of course, the very fact that the Khans or the oppressive authorities in those areas were looking at the public as if they were their personal servants.
That's right.
That Imam Khomeini's father stood up against that.
Of course.
And the fact that, you know, there were so many others who were fighting amongst themselves as Khans to take up positions in front of the Shah of that time, that they would be even more evil than the last one.
That's right. The brutality was...
You know, the brutality
was
didn't cease.
Of awful.
So in this process of the brutality that existed, Imam Khomeini's father continuously stood up against these people. And it so happens, I mean, it's really interesting, you know, thing one needs to analyze Imam Khomeini's life in relation to this. Because Imam Khomeini, being a younger member of the children of Sayyid Mustafa, he was experiencing things a lot more later on after his father's shahadat.
Yes, yes.
You see, because
after his father's martyrdom.
Because his father was martyred in 1903. And we're using the word martyr. Why? Because, you see, Sayyid Mustafa, he was seeing that the Khan of that time was very oppressive, taking up land, doing a lot of atrocities, in killing as well.
There was a violation
people.
Of women's honor there
honor
as
and
well.
Everything. So what he, with a group of people of Khomeini, decided that they would go and visit the province's head, who himself was a corrupt so-and-so anyway. But the very fact that that type of audience was available just for the sake of sure. demonstrating some type of interaction sure. with the community, mm. that these people on their way to represent Khomeini to the province's governor, that on the way there, the gangster of the time of Khomeini decided that he was going to eliminate them from reaching from before they were able to reach the governor and present them their case.
That's right. This is what is mentioned in the text, isn't it? That it was during his journey from Khomeini to Iraq or on the way back that
on the way there
that this had happened, this awful Indeed. Crime had been
and
committed.
And they shot him and he was
oh
killed.
Oh my goodness.
And of course the people of Khomeini did eventually got their reward for
the qasas, wasn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly. Yeah. For what had happened. Mm. But what I'm trying to say is that Imam Khomeini was experiencing was in his bodily existence had felt all these things that had happened around him.
Yeah.
But what was really important, I think, which needs to be brought into this context, is that we have hundreds and hundreds of ulema, thousands of ulema probably from 1920 up to now who have
That's
gone through right. the hawza.
I mean, men of great prominence.
You know,
great.
But what made Imam Khomeini Imam Khomeini?
Exactly. That is the question.
That is a very important question. And one of those things which I personally feel is the way Sayyid Mustafa Khomeini felt it necessary to have Imam Khomeini raised in a particular way.
And that's what we want to talk about, because this background is very, very interesting, and it does give us very important lessons in the raising of our own children.
You see,
as
what
well.
I found was something really interesting, and this was when Imam Khomeini was born. His mother could not feed him milk.
Right.
She was, and these are interesting correlating concepts.
Right,
look
right,
at
right.
Rasulullah Akram when he was born, his mother could not.
That's right. He was given to
a wet nurse.
A wet nurse.
But then that's interesting because he was given to a wet nurse. I mean, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala creates his own rationale for people to understand.
Yeah.
But it is a fact that the Jews of Medina knew of the fact that a prophet was going to be born. So
that's
they
correct.
Were they were always waiting for that time to get their guidance. But what was also a difficult thing was that they weren't going to allow the Prophet to survive. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created an abnormality where the child would be taken out of the Quraysh's environment, that they would not know where Muhammad was, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam.
Interesting. Very
That's
interesting.
Depriving them, the audience of him and the fact that they
so
could eliminate
even in Imam Khomeini's life, even at a very, very early stage, we're seeing parallels
Indeed.
With the history
the
of Islam.
The interesting parallel here is the fact that his mother could not. What changed the environment there is that not, God forbid, that his mother was not a spiritual lady, because she was.
No, she was a very pious
what happened,
lady, of course.
What happened was that when the child was given to the wet nurse, Imam Khomeini's father said that, look, you'll feed the child, but I will give you the food. I will supply you. My own food. So that, you know, on one side he's talking about everything being absolutely halal. From my own income.
Right from the beginning.
From my own income. But then what he asked the wet nurse was really interesting. He says, every time you feed the child, I'll give you the food every month. But throughout the month, read a few surahs to the child whilst you're feeding the child.
The surahs from the Quran.
The Quran. When the month finishes and he takes her food, he said, did you fulfill that requirement?
Right.
So the lady says, sir, you said that I should do a few surahs whilst I'm feeding the child. During this month, I've read several Qurans in front of this child.
MashaAllah, my goodness, that is amazing.
You know, so this kind of spiritual, from spiritual out, you know, from the outset, he's being spiritually pasted. You know, the milk that the mother's, the wet nurse is giving him is going to him while she's reciting Quran. He's listening to Quran whilst, you know, we think sometimes, what's a 2 month, 1 month child going to experience
but
from
the
this?
The other thing is that, you know, it begs the question, did the father have some insight as to, you know, the birth of this particular child? Already he was beginning to see something
no,
about
you see,
this?
What is important, brother, is that if you yourself are a spiritually minded person, you naturally do things which are the consequences of your spirituality.
That is true. That
you're
is
not kind
very
of planning
true.
Anything special.
No, but you're right. It's the complete culture, the complete
and that is
ethos
the culture.
In which
exactly.
he's...
And that was the culture that Sayyid Mustafa was embedded with. And he was passing it on
to his son.
His next offspring. In the same manner, his own son, who was known later on as Ayatollah Pasindide.
Yes,
he wasn't
yes.
anything small.
Yeah, we'll speak about him,
but
of
what
course.
I'm trying
yes.
to bring in this arena is that the spirituality of his father was also passed to him as well.
Yes,
he wasn't anything. You know, the leftover of what was trained for Imam Khomeini that Ayatollah Pasindide came out of. No, he was an entity of his own. And he stood firm in his own identity. His shahadat in 1903, obviously Imam Khomeini was only 5 months old.
When that happened.
So, you know, it wouldn't have kind of, I saw what happened to my father type of thing. Mm. But what was always reminded as an event, and that lineage of fighting the oppressed was already embedded in the bloodline.
Which comes from the Holy Ahlul Bayt all the time, because this is their martyrdom, their resistance at the of oppressors in their particular period, as we talk about the infallible imams, you know, is a tradition which was going to be followed by this holy family as well.
And in 1918, his mother and his beloved auntie passed away because of cholera.
Yeah, yeah.
And at that time, Imam Khomeini is only 16.
He's 16 at the time, yes.
And you see again,
The parallel that you can draw with Prophet Muhammad.
Exactly.
Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, the loss of Hazrat Khadija and Hazrat Abu Talib.
The very fact that, you know, he's losing relatives who would be over supportive.
Who were central in his upbringing. Yeah.
Exactly. So Imam Khomeini at 18. But then you see that's the demise of his mom and auntie.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing is, as of I think it from the dates that I have scribbled down, is that from about 1906, when he was about 4 years, 5 years old,
right.
He's already studying Hosa type of courses. He started memorizing the Quran. He's reading the Quran. He's learning various
Quranic sciences exactly. at a very early age.
Sorry, 1908. When he was about 6 years old. As of that time, when he was 6 years old, he's studying the Quran. He's memorizing the Quran, the recitation of the Quran, various Islamic holy books. He becomes familiar with as time goes on. You know, he and the Persian language.
Of course,
he starts mastering the Persian language and the whole old text of Persian languages.
Yes, yes.
He starts mastering them as time goes on.
Right,
that,
right.
You know, his studies, want for study, has already started.
Mm.
He's not playing around, so as to say. And left to listen to the next LP that comes out.
In other words, he's already following the Sunnah and the tradition of prophets from before, who, you know, you remind me of Prophet Yahya, actually, who was asked at one time to be playing with kids, and he said, "I'm not here to play around in life. Life was not created in vain." So, in other words, you know, you're already talking about a very powerful tradition in which, the scholarship is already manifesting itself at a very early age.
But then you see, alhamdulillah, when it comes to Islamic learning, you find that he's also learning the tools of life as well.
Right.
Learning how to ride the horse. He becomes an expert in horse riding.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He becomes expert in using defensive equipment.
He had a great love for sports at a very early age as well.
And you know, he knew how to defend himself with the weapons of the time.
Yeah.
You know, and
there's an anecdote or a story associated with that, because of, as you pointed out, with the situation with his father, you know, and what Khomeini as a town was going through because of the Khans. Imam Khomeini was very active in his teenage, learning the gun. And of course, they were already making the bunkers by which they were resisting these raids that were coming from these bandits.
Yeah. But you see, all the time, certain relatives were reluctant to see him. Maybe he would get killed or something
That's true.
He would still endeavor to learn the tools of the trade of defense at that time.
Yeah.
And it was,
and it shows him to be a very brave character right from the start.
Indeed, and when it came to target practice and things like that, he was one for the eye on targeting having a target at the necessary item. Mm-hmm. So you could see he's learning a vast range of expertise, which later on proved to be extremely essential in his own character building.
Right,
you know, and the fact that, whilst he is developing in his studies, you have, if we were to really break Imam Khomeini's life into certain phases,
we
can see that, you know, this is a second major phase of his building.
Yeah.
From the age of, you could say, 6 years old to 1962. a whole wide-ranger period of learning that Imam Khomeini is going through. For not only just learning, but also teaching.
Yeah.
That's to say, you know, more and more he's experiencing for himself, not really dabbing into any kind of confrontational situation.
I think, of course, you know, we'll do this in a later program, but I think the depth of the mastery of his scholarship and the fact that, as I say, we'll mention in the depth that even the students of Imam Khomeini, I mean, honestly, I mean, at times I'm taken back, drawn back to Imam Jafar al-Sadiq alayhi salam, when, you know, scholars of other traditions used to come and ask him questions. And he would say, well, please don't ask me that question. Please ask my student.
My student
this question. Just to see the competency, the mastery of the teaching of what he was disseminating. But as I say, that's a later
thing.
But
you see, what happened as we look at it in a chronological order.
Yeah, right.
You know, Imam Khomeini, in about 1920, that's when the First World War is finished.
Yes. And dramatic changes have taken place in the war.
Changes have taken place.
In the Muslim world.
He's, alhamdulillah, at a stage where he's expanding his knowledge more.
Right.
You know, his brother, Ayatollah Pasandide, who arranges for
him. Yes, his tutelage was exactly more with his brother, wasn't it?
His brother. And you find that his brother had arranged him to go and study in Isfahan. But instead of going to Isfahan, he's directed towards Iraq. And that
Iraq,
in itself, Iraq, that in itself has been was an essential learning process for him.
We'd like to mention for a listener, Iraq is not confused with Iraq, but
it's a central province
of a town very near Qom.
And there the houses were being run, or there the main house in Iraq was being run by Ayatollah Abdul Karim Hari Yazdi. He was the one who was running that house and very well established house as it was.
Yes, I mean, he was the founding father of the establishment of the house as we know it today in Qom. But of course, it came at a price because the Pahlavis had now come into power, especially with Raza Pahlavi. And of course, he was an army man, very brutal, very irreligious. He immediately put in the ban of the veil, which was following from Ataturk's thing, what he was doing with the Ottoman, the decline of the end of the Ottoman Empire. So a lot of things were happening which were very anti-Islam, very anti-Sharia. And of course, you know, there's that horrible story, but it has to be mentioned, that when this Raza Khan came to Qom, the leading authority at that time, one of the Ayatollahs here, was beaten by the Shah in public, in a manner to try to humiliate him. But of course, the knock-on effect was different because, of course, in the public's mind, this brought out the true nature of the beast that the public was facing, especially here in Qom.
And you see, particularly with the fact that Ayatollah Hari Yazdi was a highly respected personality.
Sure, sure.
His house, or the management of the house in Iraq, had a reputation of its own in training of ulema.
Sure.
That it could not be contested in any way whatsoever.
Right.
And you know, particularly with Imam Khomeini going over there and experiencing at a very young age, a very tender age of 18 years old,
he's
really kind of building his whole process of learning.
Sure.
From this environment, that when Ayatollah Yazdi moved the madrasa, moved the environment of the house from Iraq to Qom, which was in 1920 itself, that we see that Imam Khomeini doesn't hesitate in moving over with him. He finds that this is an opportunity not to be missed. And really and truly, a lot of people may think, well, you know, some of our community people think, okay, I've studied 6 years, 7 years, let me go back to my community. No, Imam Khomeini wants to venture further
I think this shows something about even at Imam Khomeini, even at as a teenager, he shows great insight, great depth and wisdom in his decision-making. of where he wants to go and study and what subjects he wants to study, because of course he's taking on the Hawza studies, the traditional Quranic sciences studies, but he's also learning mathematics, he's also learning other subjects as well, which shows a wisdom and an intellect superior perhaps even beyond his contemporaries, that exactly what kind of target, what kind of goals he wants to reach.
You see, but the goals, he keeps those goals under control.
That's true, because he's always against the ego, isn't he?
He's against the ego. But he was of a very important opinion that whoever is the leader of the Shia Ummah at a particular time should be the person responsible to dictate what the political environment should be.
Absolutely.
He did not venture out beyond his limits that he identified himself with in relation to the leader.
But that shows a great wisdom in there.
Not only just wisdom, but what it shows is the total nature of Shiite opinion. You look at Karbala, if you look at Karbala, and
the divergence is allowed there.
Not only just divergence, the fact that recognition of the Imam of the time. You know, you had Imam Zainul Abidin al-Islam.
That's right, because
ill and everything. Yet still, Hazrat Zainab says, "You're the Imam of the time. What should we do?"
And the other thing is that we have to point out that even Imam Hussein al-Islam, who was a completely revolutionary character alongside his brother Imam Hassan al-Islam, but if Imam Hassan al-Islam stayed quiet during the rule of Bani Umayyah during Muawiyah's 20-year period, Imam Hussein was quiet as well.
And this is what we're learning from Imam, what Imam Khomeini had learned, that when you identify with the leader of the time or whoever it is, that Ayatollah Hayri, may be Ayatollah Hayri, may it be Ayatollah Bourjedi at a latter time, you do not venture beyond that. You can guide and you can support, but you do not venture behind the authority.
And I think that the support of Imam Khomeini at that particular stage is also very, very important. As you say, it does speak volumes in itself.
Indeed.
But we are going to carry on with that in the next edition of the program, where we will go further into the scholarship of Imam Khomeini, and then later on the works that he starts to come up as an accomplished scholar. And of course, he also achieved his becoming a mujtahid at a very early stage in his life as well. But we'll get on to that at a later program. At this moment in time, my dear audience, thank you very much for listening, and I hope you've enjoyed the program as much as I have as well. So thank you for listening today. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and blessings of Allah and His mercy be upon you all.
Stream. Iran before the Islamic Revolution is not similar to Iran after it. This revolution, whose foundations were based on faith, religious piety, and theoretical and practical gratitude, was not led by emotion, recklessness, and dispersed sentiments. Rather, these sentiments were directed to be a stream that flows into the practical teachings of the revolution of morals, ethics, sincerity, altruism, humanity, trust, and faith. This terminology that many revolutions in the world never knew, which led to its disappearance on the level of impact as the years progressed, is the terminology itself which granted the Islamic Revolution the status of justice, free popular will, independence, and brotherhood. Simply because it was never smeared with the first bullet even against those who harbored hostility towards Iran since the birth of its Islamic Revolution. This revolution was adorned with blood, not stained. Imam Khomeini's revolution was preserved with the blood of the martyrs, so its children held their heads high with pride as it had never been based on violence and the initiation of wars. This revolution was defended by the public and the common people, the people of the beautiful South, Khuzestan, Sistan and Balochistan, Khorasan and all the regions of the South in particular and the Iranian homeland in general. Those who took up arms in defense of the sovereignty of the land. Old and young, men and women marched in a human stream to the site of the wound of their homeland. Some of them died and some of them were detained, so that the motherland remains, that justice remains, and that the peoples return to being united on the trait of brotherhood. It is a revolution that conjoined with another revolution, uprising and resistance of the people of Al-Quds. This formed the incubator and the arm to fight the cancerous entity that afflicted the body of beloved Palestine, the first of the two Qiblas. Iran's leader today, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, affirms the recommendations of the second phase of the revolution and stimulates the fourth generation with the need to know the past in order to build the future. A future that began decades ago with growth and prosperity in terms of science, technology, art, economy, community, and culture. A resilient bond resulted from this blessed revolution between public and the people, and it continued as per a deep-rooted oath of freedom, national pride, combating corruption, and raising the banners of science, economy, and morals. 43 years later, salute to every martyr who died defending the homeland. Salute to Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, whom with his martyrdom drew a line illustrating the course of the second phase of the revolution. Salute to the families of the martyrs. Salute to the axis of resistance on this occasion, this tributary that nourishes the revolution and still gets nourished by it. Salute to the free people of the world who were inspired by the Imam Khomeini revolution and rejected the policies of globalization and westernization. Welcome to the Mideast Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Years have passed, yet the features of the Islamic Revolution are still emerging. Between every will for evil and every hand of tyranny, Imam Ruhullah Khomeini's revolution shines, sometimes in its Husseini form, other times in its Soleimani form, to prove that the steps that were drawn along the path of belief and faith are not shaken by the beating drums of injustice and arrogance. Today, the victory of 1979 is in brighter color. Today, Iran not only stands firm in a position of glorification, contented with what the hands of its martyrs, scholars, and leaders have achieved, but it stands strong behind leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, who called upon his nation and the broader Islamic nation to take the second step towards victory. 43 years later, the Iranian nation embraces for new possibilities, starting with scientific and technical progress to comprehensive human development at all levels, rewriting their future on the pages of the Islamic Revolution. To discuss this issue with us from Tehran is Dr. Hamid Reza, Tehran's Deputy Mayor of International Affairs. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Reza. Now, this was a moment that changed the face of history. I mean, the whole world remembers when Imam Ruhollah Khomeini was stepping down from the Boeing 747 plane, which landed after 14 years in exile in the French town of Nouvelle-le-Château. That was 43 years ago. How has the Islamic Revolution affected the growth of the Iranian nation as a whole, Mr. Reza?
By changing Iran into a real sovereign country. Well, actually, first of all, thank you very much for having me. But in response to your question, actually, the main thing that the Islamic Revolution and Imam Khomeini did to this country was turning it into a real country, which is sovereign. Before that, Iran was a puppet regime, a client state to the best description, the best scenario, we can say, was a client state to the United States. and it was a battleground for the Cold War between the United States and the Soviets, or before that between the British and the Russians, and it has always been a ground for other Westerners to fight for their own interest in Iran and other countries in the region, just like we are now witnessing in some of the countries in the region, of course. So what we had before the revolution, for example, five decades ago, was a puppet regime without any control over the country, without any control over the resources, and a country in which people were actually divided into the elite ruling class, which was connected to the royal family, and the rest of the nation, who were suffering from different poverty, from lack of resources and anything. So that was the difference, the huge gap actually between the two levels, the royals, the elites, and the rest of the nation. But after the revolution, it changed, and Iran tried to indigenize people, power, and to find its power in its nation, actually, by having a connection between the ruling government and the nation. Actually, the power came from the people themselves.
And so this is very interesting to me, Dr. Reza, because after this unfair imbalance that went on for so long in favor of America, which basically always seeks to subjugate the world to its own ideology, to its dollar system, to its goods and interests and services by plundering Iran's wealth, as you said, giving itself the right to punish whomever it wants, exporting its so-called democratic values by force, and imposing its arrogance and guardianship on regimes and on peoples. Today, we can see to what extent the Islamic Republic of Iran has actually changed, flipped that equation. But as a young Iranian yourself, how did the revolution support you after 43 years and your family, especially under severe unilateral punitive measures imposed by the U.S. regime?
You know, the main point is maybe at the very surface, if you can look at the situation in Iran after four decades of tough sanctions. I remember at least four American presidents who said that they are imposing most crippling sanctions on Iranian nation. And Iran is still standing on its feet, and it is standing against, and it's challenging actually the sanctions regime of the United States. So that is the point, that the Islamic Republic and the Islamic Revolution has made it possible for its nation to look for a bright future. It is moving toward that. We don't say that we have reached that, but that place, but we are on the right track to reach that position. That is the issue, that we are now one of the top countries in many important areas, like, for example, infrastructure, like high tech, like, for example, basic sciences, and like nano and such modern sciences, we can say, and in defense capabilities. First of all, Iran has provided security for its people, and it's trying to make everything domestic and indigenous in order not to be depending on the other countries, not to be depending on the American dollars or on the Western supports and such things. So this sovereignty is the first. And this sovereignty brings actually the real opportunity for the people to be able to work for the future, to be able to try to, let's say, for example, invest in the future, in the sciences, in the studies, in the for like startups and such things that are happening right now. They know that there is a real country that they can work and fight for.
Well, Dr. Reza, you are telling us about the developments. You explained the development path of the Islamic Republic of Iran and its scientific, technological, cultural, and civilizational integration. It is immersed in its progressing path, as you explained. But the West portrays the Islamic Republic as the complete opposite of what you just said. Why are they afraid to admit their failure and pursue maybe a different approach with the Islamic Republic?
Because at the time that the Islamic Revolution happened, the world was stuck in the bipolar world, and the fight between the East and the West, the Eastern bloc of the Soviets and the Western bloc led by the Americans, and the Islamic Revolution actually introduced a new third narrative to say that neither East nor West, we are actually providing, offering a new form of government based on the Islamic teachings. And if you admit that this system is working, then you should admit that the liberal democracy and the liberal capitalism in the West has failed. The communism failed long ago, and the only remaining model in the West is the liberal capitalism. And by admitting that the Islamic Republic has lonely fought against all those punitive measures, all those sanctions, all those inhuman, actually, pressures that they have put on Iran, you should admit that it has been successful. You should admit that the Islamic revolution and the Islamic form of government is something that is truly serving the people, and it means that the others have failed. So if you admit that the Iran has fought against the terrorism and has removed the Daesh, ISIS in the Syria and Iraq and the region, or has fought against the terrorism in the whole West Asia, then you should admit that the Americans have done nothing, and they have actually supported the terrorists in this region. So they simply have put logics aside, and they are thinking just adhering to their own interests. And because of their own interests, they are unable to, or let's say they avoid to admit that they have failed, and the Islamic Republic has been successful in moving forward with the agenda it has had. It is moving slowly, but it is moving forward.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Hamid Reza, Tehran's Deputy Mayor for International Affairs, for joining us and telling us how it feels from inside the Islamic Republic of Iran as a youth and member of the community of the Islamic Republic. Thank you very much. And here's to more than 50-plus years of success to come to the Iranian nation. Thank you for being with us. Now, please stay tuned, because next we will speak how this light that came with Imam Khomeini's revolution shined all over the world.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Today, the Iranian Islamic Revolution completes its 43rd year, bringing with it tools acquired over decades that qualify it for survival, for continuity and progress in the process of facing both external challenges and internal developments. This revolution represents a civilized movement and a cultural renaissance that had the ingredients to influence global developments. We see that it was able, despite the attempts to isolate it, to besiege it, to actually thwart all these conspiracies and to resist trends that the strongest of regimes were not able to withstand. Modern history attests that what Iran has faced and is still facing to this day because of economic and commercial warfare imposed by the major colonial powers, and a military war, by the way, that drained its capabilities for more than 8 years, which no regime faced in modern history. Thanks to the faith of its people, the unity of its ranks, the wisdom of the founder Imam Khomeini and the leader Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Iran has overcome all these ordeals, and it's still facing and defying all these crises and conspiracies with insight. From Iran to the free people of the world, in this following report. Today, the Islamic Revolution in Iran completes its 43rd year, bringing with it tools that it acquired over decades, which qualify it for survival, continuity, and progress in the process of facing external challenges and internal developments in all their forms. This revolution represents a civilized movement and a cultural renaissance that has the ingredients to influence global developments and events. We see that it was able, despite the attempts to isolate, limit, and besiege it since its eruption, to thwart all these conspiracies and schemes and to resist trends that the strongest regimes could not withstand.
Modern history attests that what the Islamic face of this revolution has encountered and is still facing to this day of an economic and commercial war imposed on it by Western regimes. Thanks to its faith, the unity of its ranks, and the wisdom of its founder, Imam Khomeini, and its leader, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Iran has overcome all these ordeals and is still facing and defying all these crises and conspiracies with steadfastness and insight. However, the Islamic Republic not only united and resisted and was not only preoccupied with facing challenges but also continued its development path and its scientific, technological, cultural, and civilizational integration. The moment of the revolution was like a volcanic eruption that changed the features of the country and the history of the region. It is no longer possible to go back, but rather looking forward is a major goal for the revolution's subsequent phases in its progressing path. The revolution today is not a static revolution whose spring has passed, entering a dull fall, as per the cases of several historic revolutions. Rather, it is a renewed revolution in its pulse, because the renewal of goals and the constant setting of scientific plans makes it a steadfast historical revolution. That is the case in Iran, because the goal of Imam Khomeini's revolution was not merely to change the regime, the president, the state, and the throne, but rather the goal was reform, righteousness, and progress of the nation. You see, when the human goal is based on the eternal Islamic and heavenly principles, then this approach and this path cannot end. So does a revolution that keeps pace with modernity in its local tools that it acquired from its knowledge system. The experience of the Islamic Revolution on its 43rd anniversary can only be understood through an objective, deconstructive, analytical approach in isolation from hostile attitudes and opposing ideologies in order to find out its true features, its major objectives, and its humanitarian goal that concerns all free peoples of the world.
Now to discuss this issue with us from Athens is Lamprini Toma, journalist at the Press Project and MC at Radio Venceremos. Thank you very much for being with us, dearest Lamprini. Now, the world after the Islamic Revolution in Iran is not the same as before it. The awakening that came after a set of setbacks that shook the popular resolve from the fall of the Mossadegh government in Tehran at the hands of the American and British intelligence to the deadlock of the National Project after the departure of Jamal Abdel Nasser and the betrayal of Sadat is nothing but an embodiment of the anger of the peoples of this Arab and Islamic region. In what ways, Lamprini, do you think that the Islamic Revolution resonate to the peoples of the global south of our planet, who were eager to profess their identity, to restore their rights and dignity, and to grasp their role in the movement of history?
Thank you for having me. The Iranian revolution is a rupture in history in more ways than other revolutions, because it brings in the forefront not only the needs of the people, especially the people who survived the tyranny and brutality of colonialism. We must always remember that many peoples didn't survive, but also brought religion in the equation as the main expression of the traditions of the people, the civilization of the people, in our case, the Iranian people. Religion was part of the resistance in the fight against oppression and colonialism in Latin America and in Palestine. But in Iran, it was the main power. In a world where the two superpowers at the time, USA and USSR, thought it was forever dead and gone, it was a proof that you can win with God on your side, really, especially a God of martyrdom and sacrifice. And martyrdom and sacrifice are the secret weapons of all the popular fights in all the global south. Iranian revolution embodies that in every possible way. The Iranian revolution happened in a time when anti-colonial movements and anti-establishment movements seemed to win, and when the exploitation of the oppressed was starting to get new forms, when neocolonialism was starting to emerge as the answer to all the fight and the blood that we shed as people for our freedom and dignity, back from the West and the dominant East at the time. The depth of the beauty of that revolution, the fear it spread to the colonial powers and the power it gave to all of us, is shown in the war that followed right away, the Iran-Iraq war, and how the Iranian people managed, by shedding their blood, as usual, to win that fight too. And I dare to say every fight after that one, that by itself makes it even today an inspiration for every people who continues to fight in the world.
Well, Lamprini, talking about the lively pulse of the revolution necessitates that we address internal developments that do not know any stagnation, especially in Iran, because the democratic movement is stable at every level, as we have witnessed over the past decades, and popular participation is the title of state building. This is what the leaders always speak about, popular participation with all its involvement of women that is rarely seen even in the largest democratic countries of this world. Now, why are the surrounding countries, the neighboring countries to Iran, afraid of such a model? Why not just embrace something similar instead of grasping to the old ways of tyranny and suppression?
Allow me to add two things. Iran continued to progress not only socially, economically, but also scientifically, while leaving other sanctions